power, maybe cruising 120, 40 miles an hour. And each time they run another test, they increase that speed. And now they got it up to 136 miles an hour. And they plan on lifting the front wheel off, you know, to get enough air under the wings to do that. And they successfully did that. So give it another, maybe a couple of months or so, and not long from now, I don't think. And I'm sure you will eventually see the thing on the news flying by itself. It's a massive plane. And it should be interesting. Just looking at the wheels now. Let's see. You got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 on one, so 24. It's got like, I don't know, probably 48 wheels attached to this thing or more. So eventually we'll see the thing flying probably within a year. And then maybe another year after that before they can, you know, get it ready for actually dropping a rocket with a spacecraft on it, sending it to orbit. But this whole contraption was devised by Paul Allen. Paul Allen, you know, the computer world was partners with Bill Gates when they started Microsoft. Eventually they split from one another and they went on their own way. And Paul Allen really got involved with this project. And he just passed away not too long ago. He had got the disease that he had, but he's had it for like decades. But he got this thing, he actually got the thing go down the runway last month or so. So, they have their own rocket that they're building. So, not only will they launch NASA rockets or the Dream Chasers, but they're building their own rocket to launch into space. And they have their own engine that they're testing right now, and it's called the Paul PGA rocket, named after Paul Allen, the initials. So eventually that will be 100% theirs. And what I mean by that, the Strato launcher itself, along with their own launch vehicle and their own rocket that they're building. Now, in astronomy, two events occurred. The first one is they had these telescopes looking at the sky, and they found this area that had no star whatsoever. And the next thing you know, they had another picture. They had this bright star, tremendous bright cosmic event. They nicknamed it the Cow. And this was taken from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey that's in New Mexico. But I forget how many, you know, how bright this thing was, but they're trying to figure out what it is. It was so bright that they can't really figure out what it could have been. But, it's not a quasar, but they just don't know what it is. And then eventually it faded, and that's it. They're trying to put their finger on what that thing is. It's called a Cow. C-O-W. One other topic was the SpaceX. SpaceX eventually plans on going to Mars, and they plan on fading out the Falcon 9 rocket for the new rocket called the Starship. Starship, when you read about this a couple of years ago, you thought it was maybe 5-10 years down the road. He's now got a completed smaller version, short version. Not that the diameter is short, it's shorter, but the diameter is 30 feet. So it's a big rocket. Looks like it's probably, 150 feet tall. The finished version would be twice that height. But it's calling it the Hopper. It's going to perform similar to what Falcon 9 used to do with their rockets before they were able to launch their rockets and land them successfully on a drone ship. They used to fly the Falcon 9 in Texas, take off, and then land back on a launch pad. And they call that the Grasshopper. And they did multiple flights. at one point, the Red Papa did malfunction, and they blew it up in the air. They didn't continue on with that program. He just figured, well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to test my own rockets with a payload on board, and he would get companies to sign up with them. He would launch rockets from Florida or from California, and he would try to eventually land these rockets on the autonomous ship, which has been successful. He's probably has done this maybe 30, 40 times, successfully landed either on the ship or brought them back to land. He wants to do the same thing with this new rocket. That will be the rocket that he plans on sending people not only to Mars, but to the moon itself. And the top part of it will have enough room for about 40 people. His goal is at some point to send around 40 people to Mars. You know, and that's the ultimate goal. So that's why this thing is so big. Plans on testing this within about a month or so. And where is it? It's down in Texas. This is not something that's going to be launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California or Cape Canaveral down in Florida. Plan for launching it from Texas. He has built his own launch complex near Brownsville, Texas, near the Mexican-Texas border. It's a place called Boca Chica, Texas. And that's where this thing is now. If you look on the internet, you can find a picture of it. It really looks like something out of the 1950s. You know, it's stainless steel. I thought it was going to be a carbon-based vehicle, you know, a carbon epoxy type of deal. Maybe the final version might be, but this right now is made out of stainless steel, gleaming in sunlight. Sitting there on three legs, three extended legs on a platform, and eventually it will have nine engines. Now, not the same engines as Falcon 9 uses. Falcon 9 uses Merlin D engines, and they produce like 200,000 pounds or more thrust each. This is going to be more than that, probably twice the amount. And they're new engines, and they're called Raptor engines. The pressure that's going to be inside these engines is going to be so strong. He needed his own foundry, his own mill to make a better steel for these rocket engines so they don't blow apart with these high temperatures. Goal is to eventually have, you know, maybe 10 or 15 or 20 million pounds of thrust coming out of these rockets. Collectively, plans on eventually having, you know, maybe 30 of these rockets mounted on the bottom of a rocket. Right now, he only has three, and the idea of that is to launch the Starship he's going to start off small, you know, maybe 500 feet, and then work its way up to 500 meters to eventually 5,000 meters, fly this thing, and then bring it back to the launch pad. Boca Chica, Texas. That is his goal. So he has to first see if he can, build a craft this big, much bigger than the Falcon 9. See if he can take off in Texas and come back and land. Let me drop it. Okay, now on to the signal from a billion miles away that is now bound to repeat itself. In Canada, up in British Columbia somewhere, Canadians have built this massive parabolic type of antenna, and it's rectangular, actually, shaped laying on the ground, and it's 100 meters long and 20 meters wide, and it covers around 8,000 square feet, and it's receiving signals on 400 megahertz and from 400 all the way up to around 850 megahertz. And it's looking at patches in the sky, different locations. And they said it was only went online recently. And right after it did, it recorded this, they call them FRBs, fast radio bursts. from this particular location in the sky. And like they said earlier in the net, the amount of energy coming down that they're receiving, they figured out it had to be at that time to produce these radio waves, equivalent of 1 hour sun gives off the amount of energy in one day. So the first one was received a while back, around 3 billion light years from Earth, and now another one has been received 1.5 billion light years away. Now these two, there's been dozens of these. I think around 60 signals that they've found, you know, by scanning the skies. But these two have come from the exact same location in space. So that's very odd. It's a repeatable signal. And like they say in the article, it's not little green men sending some signal down, but it's an astronomical event, maybe some kind of magnetic, reconnection, or they're not really sure what's causing this. Whatever it is, these two locations, different places in the sky, they've received an identical signal over a period of time. So that was interesting, and now they plan on looking for a lot more of these fast radio bursts. And that's pretty much it. We covered the lunar eclipse that's coming up next week during the net. It's clear. During next week's night, we could go out and look at a lunar eclipse. You know, put on your woolies because I know it's going to be cold. And it would start around 9:36 officially in the New York area. And, you'll eventually see the part of the moon disappearing. And then you'll wind up with a total eclipse around 11:40. And that maximum would be around 12:12 officially at night. And then it will wane after that. And this will go on to 2:45 in the morning. But you'll have a long period of time of totality, which would be pretty neat, as long as there aren't any clouds. So that will be going on during next week's net, if anybody's interested, and I am. Any other comments or questions for the net? This is WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet.
Yes, Paul, AC2GS.
Go ahead, Roy.
I found it kind of amusing. If you recall the story about Oumuamua, when people were kind of wondering whether there was something special about it, and one guy came up and suggested that it was solar sails and it was a space probe from beyond. That guy was Avi Loeb. He was a scientist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, and he had the nerve to make a comment about these FRBs. He suggested that we shouldn't rule out any artificial origin. So this guy's got green men on the brain.
Yeah, well, a lot of respected guys will come up with stuff like that. You know, who's the weather guy? Gray, I think his name was. He doesn't do any predictions anymore, but he did these, for years he would do these hurricane predictions. Talk about, how many hurricanes we're going to get hit with. I think his name was Gray. Anyway, he was in the middle of the country, furthest away from any land. Not that that means anything, but I mean, he sure wasn't here on the shore. Came out of Colorado. But he's one of the few scientists that actually come out and say that there's no such thing as global warming and all of that. I'm not sure if he's still alive or not, but I'm pretty sure that's his name. But you get guys like that. Back to you, Roy.
Just look up at the sky. You'll see.
You never know. There are people who think that nothing's round, the Earth is flat, the moon is flat, everything is apparently flat, and we're living on a dome, so who could figure? Just kind of going back to the cow, that enormous burst. Some astrophysicists have two theories lately. One group thinks that it was a black hole that ate up a star that passed through its path, and another group tends to think that it's either a black hole being born or a neutron star being born. So that would kind of make it really a supernova, but there are two camps with two different opinions.
KD2KUS.
Oh, okay. Well, that's better than the magnetic reconnection thing. Was it KD2KUS? Is that it?
Akil, Uniform Foxtrot, yes. Gamma ray burst? Are we talking about gamma ray burst? I was waiting for you guys to talk about this.
Well, I mean, that's a possibility, but yeah, this is a, they call this the CAL. That was detected. They have good pictures of blank sky, and there was just nothing there. And all of a sudden, there's this bright thing, as bright as, you know, brighter than any stars around it. And then, you know, soon after that, it's gone. So they're trying to figure out eventually what caused this. Back to you.
Roger. Yeah, there's a really good special. Although it's old, it's a good special from 2001 called The Real Death Star, talking about gamma ray bursts where they detected by accident gamma ray bursts from far away and long ago when they were trying to figure out if there was nuclear testing going on the dark side of the moon in the 70s.
Yeah, that's when they... Is that when we had our detectors? We put a detector in orbit. They were trying to figure out what this was, and they thought maybe Russia was testing a nuke on the other side of the moon. Is that the story you're talking about?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I remember that. Then they realized that that wasn't true, but which, you know, we actually got people worried, you know, because this detector was so sensitive, it would pick up things that might not be true, and then that could lead to, annihilation. So, but yeah, I remember that. Any other comments?
That's it. Thanks for the report. KD2KU, back to you.
Very good. Okay. Any other comments, questions? We had a whole bunch of topics here. We covered the Dawn Terror mission that will be eventually going up to try to move an asteroid. By the way, Carl Sagan, he wrote a story about moving asteroids. Wasn't crazy about the idea. He thought, well, if you can move one, you know, that's the good part. You know, you can move it and get it away from going to Earth. Carl Sagan was worried about, you know, some bizarre country or entity somewhere saying, well, let's do away with Earth and let's push this asteroid and make it hit Earth. So he was a fan of, you know, if we're going to do it, let's be careful in what we're doing here. I remember that story. Then we cover other topics as well. The test and Hubble and Pedrov. Strato launch. Any other comments or questions?
The camera that has failed on Hubble, you may have already said it, and I may have been called away during that time. How serious is the failure? What are the chances of getting it operational again, Paul? I think I've heard that there's a partial backup system on that camera. Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
Yeah, it's Wide Planet, the Wide Field Planetary 3D core. And that's the one that is responsible for not only visual, but infrared, far infrared, but, you know, it goes slightly into the infrared, and then also ultraviolet, and it has all the detectors on it. One picture I have shows where these detectors are located. And it's got all kinds of power supplies and all kinds of equipment inside. It's big. It looks like a grand piano. And it's got the cover of, you know, the front of what looks like the drawer. You know, they were like massive drawers. Astronaut would grab a hold of this thing and slide the whole thing into the Hubble Space Telescope when they were doing it. and it does have plenty of redundancy, as well as the whole Hubble system. I mean, you know, the gyroscopes, they originally had six, and they still have them operational right now. There's three of the older versions, and then there's three of the new versions. The new versions, they expect to last three times as long as the older versions, and so I'm working on the older versions. So they're in good shape with gyroscopes, but this electronic component has failed. It's hardware. It's not software. So that's a problem, you know, somewhat serious problem, because now they're not getting any science out of this thing whatsoever. I mean, there are other instruments on board that are working, but not the Whitefield Planetary one. That's the one that's taking pictures of galaxies, it's taking pictures of the solar system, the planet, looking for asteroids and Kuiper Belt objects for New Horizons to look for. You know, this is an important part of the Hubble. But they know, from what I read, that they're going to be able to do this. They just don't want to just, you know, send a command up right now without knowing 100% of what the problem is, because say it's a hardware, they know it's a hardware failure, but they don't want to bring up the redundancy part and have something, you know, else fail because they didn't look into it good enough. So they're going to take that sweet time about this. As you know, we can't go back up and do another STS-125 mission like we did in 2009. So that's out. So they're going to be real careful there. Back again.
Any anticipated date as to when they know what's going on?
They didn't give a date, and I did get it on the NASA site, because it was, you know, like I said, anything that's ongoing, Hubble's ongoing, New Horizons, that was ongoing. Originally, it was like, you know, that was not going to be televised, but they said, oh, wait, we had money that was allocated for that, so. But it's being slowed down. They think it should have been on by now, but because of the NASA slowdown, you know, you got to remember, this piece of equipment was designed and developed a long time ago. You know, the original Whitefield Planetary one was back in the 1980s when they designed it and built it, and this one was after that. But, you know, guys have retired. Let me drop it. So they need to, you know, send out emails or whatever. They're looking to contact people that have worked on this thing in the past. And usually you get, like, NASA staff, you know, to do that, you know. And NASA staff is kind of, like, missing right now. So they're doing it, but it's slow. And they're looking to get a team together to access all the information that they can about this and figure out exactly what failed, why it failed, and how to repair it. So they did not give a time for bringing it back online. Back to you.
The failure itself, Paul, is the camera putting out some glitches, or did it completely go dead?
Unknown. I don't know yet. I know it's not able to create any pictures, so it's a hardware problem. What do they mean by a hardware problem? I mean, did a mirror fail? You know, I don't think so. But do they have redundancies built in, you know, for something like that? I don't know about that either. My guess is an electronic failure somewhere. You know, something's not, you know, it could be a power problem. They have power supplies all over this thing. You know, independent power supplies. So it could be something like that. Don't know yet, but there are backup systems for power supplies, so I know they can do that, so they have to swing it over and do this and do that. It doesn't sound like they were talking about a computer problem, but it could be too. I guess we're going to get updates as time goes on. I hope we don't have to wait for the government to open. That might be forever the way it's going. Back to you, Jack.
Yeah, that's my next question. You said NASA is slowing down. Is that because some of their funding didn't take place? Or is NASA being slowed down by the current government shutdown? Go ahead.
Yeah, shutdown. I like to call it a lockout. You know, I take it from a union's point of view. You know, they're really being locked out. As far as I'm concerned, and that's going to take a long time. The way things are going, what I see on TV, and that has shut down NASA. Only certain things are going forward. You'll probably see a delay in certain launches, like the Pegasus launch for the Icon mission. I expect a delay on that. Sophia telescope mission, which is like a Hubble-size telescope mounted inside of a 747 that's always up and flying. That's going to come to a grind, or has come to a grinding halt. But certain missions are staying put. Manned missions, International Space Station, certain deep space missions that are being covered, the Curiosity, that stays open. But other stuff is closing down. For instance, saw a report down in Florida, in Cape Canaveral. So many things are shut down that they said 750 private contractors are not operating because they depend on a NASA group. So, you know, it's snowballed into a big problem for NASA anyway. That's one of the ones that are getting hit. So it could be a problem for the foreseeable future. They're expecting delayed launches. For instance, SpaceX is supposed to send up the first crewed vehicle. It was supposed to do it January 7th. That's slipped already now to the end. Last I heard was February now. You know, it went to the end of January. Now it's into February. It's a crew vehicle that's going to be unmanned. It's going to be the exact same vehicle as if it was crew. It's going to have, you know, computers and seats but no people. And that's going to the International Space Station. That is being delayed, and that's part of this problem from NASA. Back to you.
The way both sides have hardened their position, it certainly sounds like this government shutdown could easily last one or two more months, which is really crazy. Back to you, Paul.
Yeah, I don't know. We talk about NASA, but of course there's a lot of other vital things that are involved here. I heard applications to the FCC, you know, for amateur radio. I heard that's being affected, you know. You know how it goes. You know, I think of NASA because, you know, I'd like to see them proceed. We don't want to get left in the dust. We have now China riding around with their rover on the dark side of the moon right now. We have India will have their first space launch by the end of by 2020. I just saw that they have their spacecraft, you know, being developed. It's going to sit on top of one of their big rockets, probably the geosynchronous rocket. They have two rockets they deal with, the Polar Launch Vehicle and the Geosynchronous Launch Vehicle. It'll probably be mounted onto that. In a couple of years, they're going to be in orbit. We got to get going. I mean, we're always in the lead. It's possible that somebody could start to catch up. I don't like that. Back to you, Dick.
India's first space launch. Is that a manned mission? How many men? And what's the purpose of that particular launch, Paul?
India has a goal of eventually going to the moon, but they've already launched their capsule a couple of years ago and sent it out a couple of thousand miles into space, you know, suborbital, and then sent it back to test the heat shield, make sure that worked, and now they're to the point where they plan on launching a crewed mission. They've launched hundreds of satellites many, many missions over the last 20 years or so. And then satellites together, and they got the record for launching satellites in one shot. Last year they launched one rocket. It had 104 satellites on board, all kinds of CubeSats and mini-sats. Incredible. I saw a video of the satellites being released. It's just been an end, one right after the other. So they're gung-ho. India, China, they're all gung-ho. Back to you there.
You said India wants to land on the moon. Is that going to be a two-man landing mission? I presume it's going to be a brief stay. I'm going to guess that India is not planning any colonizing of the moon, although maybe lunar orbit, but no colonizing the moon is my guess. To talk about colonizing the moon, easy to write those words on paper. To really carry it out without killing somebody is an extremely difficult thing. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, they're going to need nukes. They're going to need fission systems to, we're developing that, fission systems to put out around 4,000 watts per system. You know, they plan on sending, in the long run, you know, many of those up to a future base. And you're going to need many of them because you're going to need redundancy. Your fission system fails for any reason in the middle of a lunar night, you're going to be in big trouble. In the daytime, at least, you could probably have a bunch of solar panels out there. So India has long-term plans. Oh, I don't know what their eventual system would be. I would imagine they would send a crew up there. They're building their spacecraft to carry, right from the start, three people for orbit. I expect to see that within a couple of years. But what their ultimate goal is, they're simply getting to the moon. I don't even know how we're going to be getting to the moon. They keep changing their minds. As fast as they change administrations, they change their minds. I remember the Constellation system had that all figured out, what we were going to do. That got blown out of the water for a Mars trip, and now Mars is pretty much blown out of the water for another lunar trip. So I don't know. That's why I always say, let's do both. Back to you, Jeff.
I'm guessing Elon Musk and a few others have talked about future plans for Mars, but you've heard me say often that I'm very skeptical that any significant amount of hardware or manpower, your in my lifetime, or even the lifetime of our children, is going to go to Mars. It's 1,000 times more difficult than the moon, and just in sheer dollars, no one country can afford to do that. It would take a whole lot of countries joining their effort. And each of those countries joining their effort will say, okay, if I give you guys $30 billion of my money, what do I get in return? How do you pull K2RW?
Yeah, that's why I was a big fan of international cooperation. Share the cost, just like the International Space Station. Now, that massive thing, as big as a football field, lengthwise, bigger widthwise, was put up by 21 countries. So that worked. And you're looking at, I believe that would be over $100 billion for the International Space Station. And that's what you need for interplanetary travel, I think, too. We're on the right road with Orion. We're building the Orion spacecraft. That will be eventually going to Moon and / Mars. And that's under development. And that's actually coming along. We teamed up with the European Space Station. The European Space Agency, they built the propulsion module. They copied it after the ATV, the automatic transfer vehicle, that they used to send up to the International Space Station with the largest amount of supplies that used to go up there when we drop it. They copied that whole design and created the propulsion system for the Orion spacecraft. So it's going to have propulsion, flight support system, and all of that power. That will be what you and I used to call the service module of the, you know, you have the Apollo command module, and we used to call the part that would supply the power, and we call that the service module. Well, that's essentially what the European Space Agency has built for that, and now it has arrived in Kennedy, and now it's going through tests, and eventually will be connected to the Orion spacecraft, and eventually to the Space Launch System, and they have a lot of hardware that has been already developed for that, and that's massive hydrogen tanks, and liquid oxygen tanks that have been created down in New Orleans, and being sent over to Texas to test, and eventually to Florida. I mean, there are components, and that will be a massive vehicle with much more power than the Saturn V rocket. You know, you're going to wind up with over 10 million pounds of thrust. Saturn V was, what, 7.5 million pounds of thrust. So it gives you an idea. Back to you, Dick.
What's the anticipated height of that 10 million pound thrust vehicle? Is it more than 300 feet?
Let's see. See if I remember. Saturn V was 363 feet, and there's actually three versions of the SLS, the Space Launch System. But you know, when they finally get to the final version, that one's going to be taller than the Saturn V. I think the first version, Block One, is just slightly smaller, where the Block Two version will be about 40 feet taller. The reason for that second is that Block 2 has a much longer, bigger second stage. Block 1, the one that's going to be developed first for manned flight, will only have one cryogenic oxygen second stage, one engine for it, similar to the Ohms rocket that used to be on the shuttle. To deorbit the space shuttle. I have one of those where the final version, Block 2, would have four of those engines, which also require a longer tank, roughly 40 feet longer. So, which means that they're eventually going to have two launch complexes, two launch towers, mobile towers, one with a swing arm and everything for a crew for the Block 1 version, and then another one that they'll use for the mobile launch, which will be about 40 feet high, also with different swing arms, you know, for the crew. It's called the White Room, where they used to get into the spacecraft. All this stuff is in progress. I mean, it's all funded, and they are doing this stuff as we speak. I mean, the first launch complex, mobile launch platform is already built, and now they're working on the second one. They got funding for that.
When's the next launch that you're going to be taking a view of, Paul?
Well, it's going to be the ICON launch, and that's Pegasus launch, where the Lockheed L-1011 drops the Pegasus launch vehicle in. Originally, they were going to do that at Kwajalein Island on the Pacific, but that was canceled because they found problems on the Pegasus launch vehicle. And now they fixed that. Now they're going to fly it out of Florida instead. Take this jumbo jet up to altitude, drop the Pegasus, and have it launch the ICON satellite. That's always interesting to watch. And then the actual launch from Earth, well, I'll follow a couple of foreign ones, but the American one will be the demo, what they call Demo 1. That's the first crew vehicle of the Dragon vehicle. They call it Dragon V2, or version 2, let me drop it. And that was actually supposed to go January 7th and delayed. happy because of the shutdown. They had some complications, and then, you know, toward the end of January. And now, I think due to the shutdown, I think it's being delayed further to February, sometime in February. That will be the next exciting launch. Even so, it's not going to have a crew on there. It's going to have everything. You could put a crew in there, pressurized atmosphere, the whole bit. But they want to launch this thing to the space station and then see if they can bring it back down and land it in the Pacific Ocean safely. And if they do that, there's one other test they want to do, aboard testing, what they want to do. They want to launch a rocket, SpaceX, and take the same launch vehicle that's going to go to the International Space Station, take that, put it on top of this other vehicle, and fly it like it's going into space and have it aboard and see if they're able to bring it back safely. And then after that, NASA will approve it, and then they will be able to have launches with people, and that starts, the earliest, I think, would be July. July of this year with a real crew on board. Thank you, Dick.
When it comes to the consumables being brought on board to the International Space Station, is the majority of that going up by Progress ships? I think there's probably at least one other that's bringing up consumables. And roughly how many of those missions per year are required to keep enough consumables on board, Paul? KQRIW.
Yeah, I know. We've gone through this, but one other important mission was, when I said foreign mission, it's a Russian flight, and they're going to send our crew, two Americans and one Russian, up to the International Space Station. Right now we have three. So when they go back up, then we'll be back up to six on station. And of course that launches from Baikonur, Kazakhstan. It's a Russian launch on the Soyuz spacecraft and Soyuz rocket. But Progress usually sends around three flights up, roughly 5,000-6,000 pounds on each flight. And then we have an Antares flight coming up as well, and then Antares is launched by, now it's called Northrop Grumman. Used to be called Orbital ATK, before that was Orbital Science. Well, Orbital Science developed the Antares rocket with the Cygnus spacecraft on board. And we usually launch around two of those per year to the space station when we drop it. And they increase the power of that rocket. In the beginning, they're able to only launch around 4,000 or so pounds to the space station. And now they're up to 7,000 plus. They also have the option of flying on top of an Atlas V rocket by Boeing and Lockheed, that's under the direction of the United Launch Alliance. They've done that, I think, three times. They get a little bit more thrust, but they can usually send out around 7,700 pounds up to the space station. But it's usually two Cygnus launches, a total of five. Between Progress and Cygnus, and usually one HTV launch, that's by Japan per year. So that's six launches. Who am I forgetting? Oh, Dragon, of course, usually has around three launches to the space station. So you're roughly nine launches per year, sometimes nine or ten. Back to you, Dick.
That's almost one every month. 2,000 pounds every month being brought up for consumables. That's a lot of stuff being transported. A lot of that is water being brought up, isn't it, Paul? To be broken down, to be making oxygen, as well as consumable water.
Well, most of the water now is being recycled, and almost all of the oxygen is being recycled. I think they get like 95% recyclability of the oxygen. So, yeah, they send them oxygen and water, but a lot of science equipment, and so it's not all just, to keep the astronauts alive. They send up tons of all kinds of science equipment. They have 300 plus over 300 experiments going at one time on a space station, and it requires stuff, you know, and then eventually they send a lot of this stuff down, too. That's why Dragon is good. Dragon cargo vehicles will bring back, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 pounds at a time and land in the Pacific Ocean, and then scientists are able to get their experiments back. So that's an important feature by Dragon as well. And in the future, you're going to have Dream Chaser, you know, probably 2-3 years down the road from now, you're going to have Dream Chaser going up there, bringing up 12,000 pounds of stuff, and then bringing back maybe 6,000 or so pounds back to Earth, landing on a runway, just like the shuttle used to do. That will be cool. That's, I don't know, 2-3 years, I guess, probably 3 years from now. That's under development by Sierra Nevada Corporation. Look at this, 2 minutes left. Back to you, Dick. Any comments, questions? I'm finished. We're running out of time. K2RIWWS2N for the space portion of the TechNet.
Yeah, in the old days, you could recycle, you could get rid of waste products in the air by passing them through a filter to remove the carbon dioxide. I'm guessing now, you take the gaseous carbon dioxide, and by some kind of a fancy process...
Repeater, time out.
By some kind of a fancy process, you separate out the oxygen and throw away the carbon, the carbon dioxide. Is that how oxygen is recycled? And back to you for a final poll.
Yeah, they have that machine, a saboteur machine up there now, and, you know, I mean, their goal is eventually to, like, go almost 100% on everything. Because their long-term goal is to go to Mars, and that's what you're going to need to do. Not only in flight, but when you get to Mars, you're going to be maybe taking some of that carbon dioxide on Mars and utilizing that. Okay, 73, Dick. We'll be back next week. Turn it over to Roy anyway. AT2GSWS2N. Good net tonight. You covered a lot of good topics, and we'll turn it over to you, Roy.
Hey, Doug. Thanks, Dick. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for everyone who participated tonight. I really enjoy it when people respond. Once again, email, if you have anything that you want to send me, any comments, questions, answers, topics, it's mailbag@ac2gs.com. And if you want links to any of the articles that I was mentioning, they're up on roy.ac2gs.com for you to look at and click and watch the YouTube when you have some free time. So this is AC2GS, and I'm going clear, and I wish all of you guys a great week, and we'll all be back again next week to do it all over again.
How do we keep doing this? Bye-bye. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Roy. 73, you all. See you guys next week. K2RIW clear.
73, guys. WS2N clear. Till next week.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Thank you. tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. W2VL Repeater System. Welcome to the W2VL Repeater. Time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
We're coming back from a late
that. So, anyway. Barry has to, got to do a favor for Barry today. Someone with his driver's license.
He said, where are you going to drive him? I know all about it.
Yeah. So how am I coming into the repeater?
A little scratchy, you're breaking up, but it's just enough to copy you.
Yeah. Are you familiar with an Alpha 77 amplifier?
I'm not sure if I heard of that one or not. Isn't that the big one with the 8877?
Well, I just sold an Alpha 9500 with an 8877. But they used to make another one with an 8877 called an Alpha 77. They made two models. One with one 8877 and one with two 8877s. The DX and the SX. The DX was sold in the United States with one, and the SX was for export with two.
Okay. I don't know where you got that, but good for you.
No, I don't have it. Speaking of, it's well built amplifier. I was thinking of possibly getting one at a good price, but I don't know. So, how's your amplifier?
Oh, I got a little problem with it right now. Andy is stopping by today.
Oh, that's good. I hope it, does it go on? Does it, read plate voltage?
Well, you can hear the thump from the transformer. It's got high voltage, but it's not getting up to the amplifier. There may be a fuse for a relay. That's what I think.
Roger that. A QRX.
What was that?
QRX. Okay. Yeah, very good. I hope you get that ironed out.
Yeah, you and me both. Andy will stop by today. He may pull it out of the house. He said the amplifier itself comes out. But first he's going to check and see if it's a fuse.
When was the weather last?
Again, it got noisy.
When was it working last?
Oh, I don't know, a few weeks ago. And by the way, this is N2BO.
Did it stop working while you were using it?
I didn't get that. I was using it, now I can't. A few weeks.
But did you develop the problem while you were using it?
That's correct.
Did it happen during tuning?
No, it didn't.
Well, I hope he gets it ironed out without having to take it out.
Yes, I hope so. If he takes it out, it'll be a while, you know? And with my antenna, I don't get out without power.
I know, you and me both. But being near the water might be